another. Triathletes trying to triumph over treacherous waters, terrifying traffic ways, and tribulating trails. Uncle Gary tried a triathlon, but was told he needed a tibial transplant and a triple bypass beforehand. Episode of the Days Grim. My name is Brian Michael Day.
My name is Thomas Grimm.
And I am Drew Head.
What's up, gentlemen?
New location.
Yeah, we moved, actually. So
yeah, Brian moved in with me.
Over in Drew's house. What's up, dudes?
Not much.
Everybody doing okay?
Yeah, just testing out some new equipment, a little new scenery, little new equipment test.
It was a little touch and go there for a second.
I didn't think we were going to make it, but we got it, thanks to Drew.
Pinewood Derby champion.
I have something.
Oh. Yeah, Pinewood Derby champion.
Yeah. I have something new about myself that neither of you noticed.
Nice.
I got my septum pierced. And you fucking assholes didn't even say anything.
Oh, well, pardon me.
You can barely see it.
It's not pronounced.
No, it's kind of hidden.
Yeah, are you going to get bigger as time goes on? Is that something you have to gauge up?
No. Most people don't gauge their septum. My girlfriend gauged hers. You started about 16. She's at 12 now.
I know some people that did they gauged their septum.
Your girlfriend sounds like a fucking badass, dude.
Yeah, a little bit. Speaking of badasses.
True that. Drew, cue it up.
Our guest this week is my lovely, beautiful, amazing mother, woo! Beth Head.
Beth, hello.
Hello.
How are you, ma'am?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here. Yeah, this is my first podcast.
Really?
No way.
Well, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I've never been a guest on a podcast.
So, little quick brief synopsis of who you are and what you do. So, as far as what we know, one, you gave birth to a badass, a very creative mind that we love and cherish at the Days Grim.
With a pierced septum.
Yes, with the pierced septum now. Putting holes in his body, what every mom loves.
Yeah, that's my baby. That's the youngest. I actually gave birth to two other wonderful humans, and Drew's the baby, so
yeah. Seeing him grow.
So are you though?
I am. To start out, I grew up in I am the youngest of six.
Wow.
In a obviously Catholic family.
Sick.
Grew up in was born in Maryland, grew up in New Jersey.
Oh.
And moved out to the Midwest, to Owensboro, and when I was 19, ended up training horses for a little while in Owensboro, and then eventually got a job at the hospital there, worked on the ambulance service, went to nursing school, came to work here in Evansville, eventually, had met Drew's dad and had a family and worked as a nurse here in Evansville, first at Welburn Hospital, and I was a ICU nurse and an ER nurse and a flight nurse for quite a bit of my career as a flight nurse with
flying in helicopters while pregnant with all three of her kids,
or just not with Matt. I got that job when my oldest son, Drew's brother Matt, was 5 months old, and flew through the other two pregnancies. And Drew, I have pictures of me massively pregnant with Andrew,
probably somewhere in
a flight suit. Yeah, it's in this room somewhere.
And then when did you get into triathlons?
That was, I started riding a bike again. Of course, everybody grows up riding a bike, but I started riding a bike when a friend, I picked up a used mountain bike in somebody's garage sale. And started riding a bike when Matt's older brother was quite small.
Called me the wrong name. Drew.
I'm sorry. Drew's older brother, Matt, when Matt was quite small.
Damn.
He would fall asleep in the little seat behind the bike and just started riding a bike. Did the Evansville's very own Great Pumpkin Metric, was the first endurance event of any kind. And at that time, a 15-mile bike ride at the Great Pumpkin Metric, the shortest distance, seemed kind of a big deal.
That's what it was called? The Great Pumpkin Metric?
Yeah, it's the Great Pumpkin bike tour, but it is what they call a metric century. So it's the distances are in kilometers rather than
I was wondering
miles.
Where metric was coming from. Yeah. I was like, what the What? I don't understand.
Colloquially, amongst the local bicycle community, it's the GPM or the Great Pumpkin Metric. Okay. And so that was the first thing I ever did endurance sports-wise when the kids were still really little. And then eventually, a few years after that, I got my first road bike and did my first triathlon in 2003 or 2004.
Ooh.
And then have been pretty steadily involved, sometimes more so with triathlon over the years since that time. I did my first attempt at Ironman was at Louisville in 2010, and I didn't finish, and I ended up going to another Iron Distance triathlon in Florida later that year. And so October of 2010 was my first Iron Distance triathlon.
For anyone who doesn't know, an Ironman is a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and a 27 marathon. Mile
and run. No, a full marathon, 26.2 mile run.
Yeah,
that's insane.
It's insane. That's crazy.
Well,
to me.
And the one in Florida, you got waves to deal with too, which totally throws off your breathing.
Open water.
Yeah, there was a year I've done Ironman Florida a couple of times, but there was a year, you know, that it's kind of a crapshoot. Sometimes the Gulf is great and it's a beautiful swim, and then there are years where the surf's up, or there was one year I did it that was extremely cold. And there was a very significant current that made the swim. Just I got out of the water at the swim and said, "Meh, I'm done."
That's what they say about the Alcatraz Ironman.
I was going to bring that up. Have you seen the Alcatraz Ironman?
Escape from Alcatraz is actually not an Ironman race, but it is a classic. I mean, it is an epic triathlon. But the swim is shorter than an Iron Distance swim, but it is very challenging because of the currents and the water temperature. And there are sometimes people who kind of miss the trajectory to get to where you need to get out of the water, who have to be kind of pulled back and rescued before they end up under the Golden Gate Bridge.
And it's because there's, like, obviously Alcatraz is on a rock island, and then there's the mainland. And the way that current pulls along the coast and splits at the island. Yeah, dude, I bet it's super easy to screw up, like, okay, I'm aiming right here, and then you take like four strokes and you're like already a quarter, you know what I mean? Like, you're already off.
Were you into triathlons before Drew did swimming?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was into triathlon, and I started swimming with a master swim group when we lived in Jasper, and I signed all three of them up for swimming when they were little kids.
Sick.
Did you throw Drew in when he was a baby?
We had a pool in our backyard then, and they all had swimming lessons and knew how to swim. And then, you know, my kids understand swimming in ways that I never did, because I knew how to swim. I grew up at a lake, but I never swam competitively. And all three of them are way better swimmers
What's your go-to stroke?
What's your main stroke?
Freestyle is the preferred stroke for triathlon, and that's the only one I'm really
I'm going to have so many questions. I'm going to have so many questions. But first off, I have to ask, have you seen any of the Days Grim pods before? Drew does a lot of work for us, so I've watched some clips.
I've watched some clips here and there, I've listened a couple of times.
It's not your
usual podcast.
No, yeah. Not it's... my podcast consumption tends to fall into
intelligence.
I listen to a show called Up First from NPR and The Daily from the New York Times.
I like
so
NPR.
I like try and stay in a little informed about the world. There's also a foreign policy podcast called Pod Save the World, or it's Pod Save the World is the foreign policy one.
Nice.
I'll listen to that.
Nice. So
I listen to triathlon stuff, gravel cycling stuff, because over the years, as I've been involved in triathlon, I've gotten more interested in gravel cycling.
Do you go cycling with that group out
in Bluegrass?
Yeah. With the owner of Cycling Solutions and them?
Yep. I've ridden with Ben and Rachel many times.
I love Ben.
Such a nice guy. He cut me a deal on my road bike.
They are good folks.
Yeah, he got like a freaking... Are we allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, because you got like a freaking $2,000 bike for like...
Yeah, like $400.
That's a good
Somebody
deal.
Traded it in for a better road bike.
Is it a Trek?
It's a Specialized.
Oh, that's a good bike.
Specialized, yeah.
Yeah, Specialized makes a nice bike.
But I wanted to mention, I wanted to ask if you'd seen any of the shows before, because before we get into the nitty gritty and dive into who you are and what it is that you've done and do, we like to do this thing called the Death of the Week.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that segment?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I have heard of the Death of the Week.
We're in a strange place. Normally, I do enjoy reading them. However, there's no monitors here. So, Drew, if you would be so kind as to, and make sure you give it a nice dramatic pause.
The Death of the Week.
Okay, for the Death of the Week this week, since my mother is a CRNA, she does anesthesia, we decided to find an anesthesia-related death. The title of this article is The Tragic Impact of Anesthesia Awareness on a Patient and His Family. And scroll down, there's this little subsection that says, in 2006, she underwent exploratory surgery to determine the cause of recurring abdominal pain. The paralytic was effective, but the inhalational anesthesia was not. He was unable to move or speak and felt everything that was happening to him. Because his eyes were taped shut, he couldn't see, which was likely terrifying. The medical team didn't know that Mr. was awake until 16 minutes into the surgery. They gave him an amnesia-inducing drug after they realized what occurred and did not inform him that he had been awake during part of the procedure. Although Mr. was unable to remember exactly what happened, he knew something was wrong. Shortly after surgery, Mr. began having panic attacks, insomnia, and nightmares. He also believed that people were trying to bury him alive. At 73 years old, he'd never had any psychological issues before the surgery. Tragically, 2 weeks after the operation, he committed suicide. Not directly anesthesia related.
I hate suicide deaths of the week for one reason only. Kind of a bummer.
It's a little bit of a bummer.
Because depression's involved, and then everyone gets real emotional and sad. But, okay, let's not focus on the fact that homeboy offed himself, because that's depressing. Let's focus on the first portion of the story. Do you guys know the movie Awake? Are you familiar with the book Awake?
Nope. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the book or the movie Awake?
I have not seen the movie, but I understand the premise.
I wonder if they have a name for it, something parathesis or paresthesis.
Anesthetic awareness.
Yeah.
And it is a risk of anesthesia. Mm-hmm. It does happen. The motto of all anesthetists, whether they are physician anesthetists or anesthesiologists or nurse anesthetists, is vigilance. Meaning that is my whole job, is to be paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing to do with the business going on related to the surgery.
So you're looking for like a hand twitch or anything along those lines?
Well, usually a lot of times, and in the scenario Drew described, the patient's paralyzed. They are absolutely and totally vulnerable. So my job is to be ensuring, I tell my patients every time when I talk to them about their anesthetic, that my job is to make sure that they are safe and comfortable. So that is my responsibility, to ensure that they are asleep and that their vital signs are stable, and that, you know, it's very complicated to get into all the details of how that's accomplished, but that's my entire job. And to make sure that they're not injured by something that the surgical team is doing, or the movements of the table, or the way that they're positioned, because they cannot speak up and say,
right,
you know, hey, you're pinching my fingers with the you know, they can't do that. They're completely and totally vulnerable. So that's all what my entire career has been about for the past,
which,
17
like sounds
years.
Super scary, and that's a job with a lot of responsibility. But I feel like it's also like this story and some of what you just said kind of makes it seem like, oh, being put under is terrifying. Avoid it at all costs. Like, don't do it. It's dangerous, which it can be. But mm-hmm. I feel like that's
no. Anesthesia is so much safer now. You are much more likely to be injured or killed in an accident, in a car accident on the way to the hospital, or in many, many other ways. Anesthesia is tremendously safe because we have you know, in the early days, back in the, you know, early times of doing anesthesia, they didn't have the kind of capabilities of monitoring people and the advances in pharmaceuticals and anesthetic gases and all of the machines that we use today make it possible that that anesthetic awareness is a very rare occurrence. It is a not common occurrence.
We all know how much I hate needles and blood, but man, I love a good anesthesia.
And that's another thing. We should have mentioned that before we started recording. Tom does not do
I have vasovagal syncope.
Yeah, so he will drop.
Yeah, that's pretty
like,
common.
Like that. Yeah, if you talk anything needle, blood, let's just stay away from it because he will drop.
Yeah, probably definitely should have mentioned that.
Yeah. I didn't put two and two together.
It's really common. A lot of people, and in fact, people who will come for surgery who have like tattoos and stuff, and they will pass out having a tattoo, or they'll pass out having their IV started. It's really common.
He passed out getting a stencil of a tattoo.
Yeah. Plus
the thought of the needle. Yeah. Yeah.
He also passed out on a podcast.
You both have. Okay, anyways.
I've almost done it on another time.
I heard about that.
I do want to mention before we dive in, so that was this week's Death of the Week brought to you by thedaysgrim.com. Get in there, get you a t-shirt. It's a very rudimentary website with some very not rudimentary merch. So help us out. I think you get a t-shirt for like $15. So do it. That being said, before we start into your timeline, which we're going to do our best to follow, I dig your vibe. The all black, I'm into it. I wear black a lot. I love black in general. So I wanted to compliment you. I'm digging your vibe.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
That being said, we mentioned a little bit about where you're from. So you were born in Maryland?
Yeah, I was born in Maryland, and when I was about five, my dad took a job that moved our family to northern New Jersey.
What interesting people there, huh?
Yeah, can you give me just a positive about anything in New Jersey?
Oh, New Jersey's... One positive. Where I lived in New Jersey was a, believe it or not, very beautiful rural area. Where I grew up in New Jersey, the Appalachian Trail actually passes through my hometown. It's in the mountains.
Okay.
We had three really small ski areas and almost nothing else. We had a resort hotel.
Vernon, New Jersey, right?
Vernon, New Jersey. And we had three small ski areas, a theme park, and a resort hotel, and... Not much else.
Two stop signs or two traffic lights.
When
that Johnny Knoxville movie came out, Action Park,
that is the town that I grew up in.
Nice.
Were you like into biology through high school and stuff?
I did well in biology and chemistry. I actually started out. I did not want to be a nurse in high school, but I started out as a pre-vet major. Out of high school, I went to
veterinarian.
Yeah, Rutgers University for a year as a pre-vet major. Was not happy. I wanted to go train horses and stuff, so I did that for a while, and eventually circled back around and decided.
It's crazy
to
that you went from horses
school.
With ketamine to people in ketamine, right?
Yeah. Well, I thought I liked taking care of sick horses, and maybe I would like taking care of sick
Can
people.
Can we put a dog ear here? Now, I know I said I wanted to bring up something that had nothing to do with triathlons earlier in the show, and I totally forgot about it. That being said, now it pertains to what we're talking about right now. I was making a coffee this morning while I was getting our bags packed to come out to do the show here. And as I make my coffee out of my espresso maker, I grab my milk out of the fridge. It's Fairlife. I love Fairlife milk. Big fan. Pull it out of the fridge. Start pouring it. And for whatever reason, I was like, I need something fun and light to talk about on the podcast tonight. So I want to have like a funny little one-hitter. So I make my coffee. I go sit down. I pull up YouTube and I just search... Fairlife cows, you know, how are they treated? Cause I was always told that they were treated exceptionally well, pasteurized, like out open, whatever. And then how are they really treated is what I searched. I get to YouTube. You'll never be more sad than when you Google.
Industrial farming is not great for warm fuzzies.
It is terrible. They had a lawsuit 2 to 3 years ago about how they were treating their calves. They were literally, there's videos on YouTube and you can search them if you want, but there and pull up one and let them see it on the screen recording. But my God, there was one like 4 minute long video I watched and it was just people like kicking and stomping baby calves.
They got free range cattle now and a lot of people are transitioning to this more old school style. You have less dirt runoff. It's better for your land. But I mean, who knows? With the way things are going, you might not have cows in 5, 10 years.
Who did we have on the show in the studio that did the was talking about starting a homestead? He's already begun and he's just not fully completed yet. Do you remember his name?
My mom's got a mini homestead. She got.
I'm telling you, homestead. After seeing the video I saw on YouTube today of people like kicking baby calves in the mouth, I'm like, dude, I'm going homestead all the way.
If you can grow your own food and raise your own, you know. Sustain yourself, that's definitely a good choice.
Especially with how processed everything is nowadays.
I just didn't know if you guys knew how bad the Fairlife cows are being treated because they promote them as like they're very well treated, like almost like Wagyu steak, it's brutal, bro.
I'm watching this video. It's an article titled Undercover Video Shows Animal that's Abuse the one I watched. At Fair Oaks Farms.
Yep.
It has a shot of the manager sitting on the ground with his shirt off, smoking either like meth or crack or weed out of a crushed tinfoil can.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to a guy in a truck snorting coke.
Yeah. That's the one I watched.
And then I assume it's going to get to the cow kicking here in a minute. But
the cow kicking.
So far, it's just drugs.
Dude, the cows were just dying. They do drugs. They grow drugs on the property. It's in Indiana. That's what really blew my mind is where they got in trouble. It was in something with a W, Indiana.
In northern Indiana.
Norkin, Indiana.
I don't like this at all.
No, it made my heart hurt. I was like, golly, dude.
So how many hours did you end up down that? Because YouTube is great for information, but you can end down a wormhole and spend a lot of time there.
I wound up on how long it would take us to get to Mars if we left today. That's where I started, and then I wound up
With modern propulsion or with the new propulsion?
Modern propulsion. Actually, Saturn V rockets is the one I wound up on, and why we... Yeah, it's a long story. But anyways, I wanted to see if you guys
were aware.
You
wanted to derail
aware.
The conversation on cow abuse.
But no, so you get into training horses, and you find that you're having a good time with that, and that's in Owensboro, right?
Yeah, I did that for a few years with the understanding.
And how old are you when you do that?
Oh, I was in my early 20s.
Nice. Okay.
And then I knew I wanted to go to nursing school. So, you know, I wanted to go to some kind of school. And I had, you know, talked to some people and nursing seemed like a good choice. So I applied for they were starting up a new nursing program at the community college there in Owensboro.
Okay.
So I ended up getting into nursing school, and I had to have a job that I could do in the evening. And through some connections I had made, I managed to find this job at the hospital there as a dispatcher for the ambulance service.
At Wellburn?
No, that was at Owensboro, Davies County Hospital there in Owensboro.
Nice, dude.
And so they were just starting to have ambulance dispatchers, and that was one of my first jobs as, you know, I was maybe 20.
And that's just getting a phone call directing the ambulance to where they need to go.
Yeah, so you're answering like 911 calls.
Yeah,
so.
What's your emergency? What's happening? Are they breathing?
Yeah.
And you're walking them through what to do until help gets there, basically.
So I didn't know anything about that. I was a, you know, very young, you know, I had no training in emergency care, but they sent me to both the emergency medical dispatcher course and later on to the EMT class. And after a while, I ended up working on the ambulance.
So
and
when you're in the ambulance, I knew a guy that used to work in an ambulance, and God bless you.
Bless you.
He was like super health conscious, but then when he would be in... When like it would be his like week to work in the ambulance, he would smoke cigarettes so he could stay awake and like on top of stuff. It was such a wild thing because he's like this clean, healthy guy. And then like you could tell what week he was working on the ambulance because he'd be like a monster and like a marble red and you know.
Yeah. Well, this was like I said, it was a long time ago. This would have been the early 90s.
Shout out. Early 90s babies. Yeah.
I just imagine like people in like trying to stay awake. They're breaking open the smelling salt pads.
We worked like 12-hour shifts. So, and sometimes I worked night shift there for a while.
Oh, I know. Speaking of early 90s babies, is it weird knowing that you had Drew after 9/11? Isn't that a weird thought to think about?
I remember that day quite well.
Where were you? Everyone
remembers
9/11.
It was like right before you found out you were pregnant with me, probably.
Yeah.
Damn, what a traumatic time to find out you're pregnant.
And Andrew's sister was still... Andrew and his sister, Catherine, are only 18 months apart.
Damn.
So Catherine was tiny. I had taken Catherine and Matthew to daycare in the morning. I'd worked night shift at Lifelight the night before.
Yeah.
Took Andrew and Matthew to the Welburn Children's Center daycare. Dropped them off. And while I was... The first plane had hit in that morning as I was like getting home from work and getting the kids ready to go to daycare. And the second plane hit as I was driving down Highway 41.
Yeah, it was like an hour later, wasn't
what
it?
Was, crazy. What was it like flying in a helicopter, live flighting for the first time?
Yeah, did you hate flying in a helicopter?
I still miss flying in a helicopter.
It's
flying
pretty dope.
In a helicopter is great.
And they fly to like Riley, Louisville, basically
any
major...
Yeah, or to, you know, a roadside where there's been a... accident or
like
an industrial
in
like coal mines or industrial accidents or any kind of accident. So I've landed all kinds of different places.
Where's the weirdest place you've ever landed? Yeah, dude. What it's got to be like right next to a swimming pool. Like
no, like the volunteer fire department you know, somebody would set up a landing zone. Kind of the coolest places I've ever landed has been like landing on the interstate because they shut the interstate down in both directions.
You
could just see the cars lined up and we'd land and
you're like, yeah, I do this for a living.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
This is fucking tight.
But that was the job that I had wanted for a long time.
And then so from like that, the life flighting ambulance stuff, when do you start becoming an anesthesiologist or a CNA?
I decided to go back to graduate school. I had, you know, some different jobs at Lifelight and just wanted something more. So I applied to graduate programs and I started graduate school in 2005. And it's like at that time it was a 2.5-year program.
So
and
with
graduated in 2007.
With anesthesiology, I heard that Brian doesn't partake in like recreational cannabis of any sorts, whereas I heard that if you're like...
It just increases your anesthetic requirements.
Okay.
What is it? Can you explain that? What does that mean?
Meaning like I might use more creative, like I might use a combination of drugs.
Like put a dash of THC in there?
No, we don't use that.
This is like Inception, I feel like. You know what I mean?
That is not an anesthetic medication. Yeah. But if somebody uses the enzyme systems in your liver that metabolize things like cannabis, and alcohol and other recreational drugs are the same ones that process the medications that we use to sedate people or to put them to sleep for an anesthetic.
Nice.
So you're just going to require more.
And then so when you put somebody under, is it the amount of dosage that keeps them under, or do you give them something like, or just pull the line out that wakes them up?
It depends what it is. Like, for instance, if you were going to have a procedure done under sedation, you would give medicine through that IV continuously or intermittently so that that person would be asleep while the procedure was going on.
Yeah.
I probably would not put a breathing to, like when people go to have a colonoscopy. They receive medicine through their IV while the procedure is going on.
Mm-hmm.
That medicine takes effect quickly and it goes away quickly. Like Michael Jackson had some misadventures with propofol. That's the name of the medicine.
I love propofol.
It is not designed for home use.
Recreational.
Michael Jackson's problem was that nobody was doing my job in ensuring that he was safe.
That just administered it and left.
Or he did. Something went badly wrong with his use of propofol. And of course, he ended up not surviving that experience. So that medicine takes effect quickly and it goes away quickly. So while you are giving it during a procedure, somebody will be sedated and tolerating the procedure. And when you stop giving it, it is metabolized by, you know, your body and you wake up a few minutes later.
So have you ever had somebody count like, so like I had surgery and I had to get put under.
Nobody wants to do math while they're, well, no, they're
they always like, so like I had a tumor removed and
from his testicle.
When they gave me my sedation, they were like, count backwards from 10.
I have never in my entire career in, you know, 17 odd or more years of providing anesthesia, I don't know anybody who tells people to count. But I have heard this from a lot of people.
I made it to like 4. And the lady was like, is there a kink in his line?
Somebody is out there asking people to count. I do not do that. I do find that people often wake up in the same emotional state that they were in when they went to sleep. So I tend to tell people to think about something pleasant and relaxing, to think about their favorite spot to go on vacation.
That makes sense. I was in a humorous mood.
And put them in mind of something that is happy for them.
I actually have two Michael Jackson questions back to back. I'm glad it came up. This is a phenomenon to me. Okay, first off, do you think, I know he was on trial when he passed, or maybe he wasn't, I don't know. Do you think he did it? With the kiddos.
Yeah.
Do you think he did? Do you think he was guilty? Look at Macaulay Culkin.
It seems like there, you know, it wasn't a small rumor. It seemed like there's a possibility that could certainly be true.
Macaulay Culkin has like gone on record and said like nothing happened.
That's true. But if I was peddled by a peddler, I would probably say the same thing to like, you know, be able to go to bed at night.
Not in this day and era. You know how much clout and fans he would
get.
That's
true.
From that?
Dude, our podcast would blow up. Anyways, that being said, second question. Do you think, I listen to morning radio on my way to work every morning. I cannot tell you how many countless times they play Billie Jean and like all these Michael Jackson hits, Thriller, et cetera, et cetera. At what point do you like I get mad when I hear it on the radio. I'm like, because I think he did it.
You think at this point we should cancel him or
even though he's dead. I don't care. Yeah, cancel the dead guy.
Because Thriller's a great album.
Know it is.
Is your question like, do you separate the art from the artist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You separate the art from the artist? Thank you, Drew.
I don't know. I think when you learn things about people, or about things like we went to SeaWorld and had a great time. We had a great family vacation. We saw the whale with the floppy Tilikum, the whale.
Yeah, until you realized that he had some deaths on his
He had a few bodies by this point. This was months.
He said, make SeaWorld trap again.
Make SeaWorld trap.
This was months after killed Don Branshaw.
Yeah, this was a few months after that.
Rest in peace, Don.
We saw Blackfish. And I don't know that I would go to SeaWorld.
Okay, hold on a second.
One of his favorite movies.
I have a problem with you getting upset over Blackfish and not Free Willy.
No,
Free Willy started it.
Free Willy, fucking great movie.
Yeah. and call back to Michael Jackson. It's coming back.
Is Free Willy problematic? Sure. But it came out and there was a whole, like, people loved this whale.
Yeah.
Willy. Which I think was, its actual name was like Kiko, I think.
Yeah.
But they, people loved the whale so much and wanted it to be set free, but it had been captive its whole life. So they, basically funded this whole program to relocate it and like put it in an ocean pen.
The one from the movie.
Yeah, but not like free completely because it would just die.
Really?
So I think they like slowly tried to readjust it to like the ocean.
You think Kiko's got bodies?
I don't know. He's dead now though.
So rest in peace, Kiko. yeah.
You see, they think they can understand like whale and dolphin now?
I don't discount that.
Well, there's a similar story I read maybe in the New York Times in the last week or so. There is a beluga whale that sort of escaped from some sort of Russian naval training program and ended up in one of the Scandinavian countries. and is kind of in doing danger that reconnaissance? Because it's, well, no, because he's habituated to humans, so he's hanging around harbors and he wants to be near people, but it's not necessarily safe for him, and so there's people who are making efforts to...
Kind of like a manatee, like a low...
Yeah, exactly.
And the beluga is the one with the big bump on its head, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought.
So
that's
I guess wild, getting back to the original topic of when you know things about people, like in hindsight, should you just not listen to their music anymore?
I don't support it.
Like I love comedy.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some comedians.
Louis C.K.
Louis C.K.
Yes.
Prime candidate.
Dave Chappelle.
I vividly remember
Public Enemy numero uno.
Sitting through Louis C.K. specials yeah. as a child because
yeah. I loved some of his early specials were great.
Oh, dark humor.
I don't necessarily, given what I know now about some of his behavior, I don't
he's a little less funny.
I don't circle back to watch the old Louis C.K. material the way I might with somebody who is not problematic.
So yeah, how long were you into nursing before you like what put the triathlon seed in your brain?
I don't know.
That was also you know.
And was this around the time of like sobriety?
No, actually that was sort of much later. But I had, of course, had three kids in a relatively short period of time. And I think, as many women do, you have small children at home and you feel like you need some kind of goal or, you know, like a reason to work on fitness.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Around that time, there was we had, not to overcomplicate the story, but for a brief time, we went out and I took a job in Denver, Colorado for a helicopter company. And we lived out there very briefly and then ended up moving back to Evansville. And there was a group of folks in the ER at St. Mary's who were going to train for the very first Evansville half marathon.
Hell yeah.
And at that time, I was just getting into triathlon. And so I trained for my first triathlon and that first Evansville half marathon in like, must have been 2003, 2004, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
I wasn't a very good swimmer.
In fact, you still chose to freestyle the whole thing?
Yeah, I did my best. When I told my husband that I had signed up for this triathlon, he said, "You can't swim that far. You will drown." And I didn't drown, but I thought I was never getting out of that lake.
Was touch this
and
go an for Olympic a while. Distance?
It was an Olympic distance. That was up at
1 mile
at
in the water.
Purdue. Yeah.
Which, I mean, compared to an Ironman is not too bad, but for someone who doesn't swim regularly, a mile is a long way to swim, especially in open water.
1,600 meters is 600 meters is so far. I mean, it's a mile. It's 5,000
feet. For like an average swimmer, it's going to take 40, 45 minutes in a pool.
It's also, that was a lake swim. It was an open water swim. And sighting, if you've not swum in open water before, finding like swimming straight and staying on course can be challenging. So it wasn't pretty, you know. I'm coming at this with, and this is what I tell
not
people
choreographed.
I tell people, you know, I decided I wanted to, you know, take on this challenge, but I am coming at this with really no native athletic ability. I have no talent.
You weren't an athlete in high school or anything.
No, I mean, my high school sport was downhill skiing.
That's still a sport. So
I know how to ski, but
that's a sport because that requires a lot of core and a lot of leg strength.
But
and,
like, was nutrition big at then? Was supplements big around 2003? Especially having three kids, you don't have necessarily the disposable income for supplements or.
No, I was fairly overweight for a triathlete.
So am I.
I felt like awkward and uncomfortable and out of place. And, you know, early, and this was a long time. I think the sport of triathlon has become much more inclusive. And, but at that time, I was like, who is this, you know, fat lady in spandex showing up here wanting to do this race?
Did you practice your transitions from swimming to biking and biking to running?
I did, and I, you know, I prepared as best I could. But at that time, I got a book because, you know, the internet was not yet a thing. So I got
this is a... what year?
2003.
Like it was a thing, but it wasn't nearly as big as it is.
Right. You can't... Yeah, there it wasn't even...
It wasn't,
to use dial-up to access
dial-up,
it.
And there wasn't a lot of searchable material online. There's certainly, like, streaming a video on dial-up.
Not possible.
Yeah, not possible.
Workout's a thing then?
Yeah, but I had a book, and the book had a training plan in it. And so I followed the training plan, and it was in minutes. And I went to the YMCA and swam in the pool there and, you know, rode my bike and did the amount of time. And I finished that race.
Is it crazy now with smart tech?
Yeah. Our world and like the way that we get information about things that we want to do is so much easier.
Do you use any smart tech? I mean,
got a Garmin.
I've got a Garmin.
Okay,
Phoenix 7S.
And I think my favorite thing about that. So I use the Apple Watch because everything we do is Macintosh already. It's easy transition for me. But I have the Ultra Apple Watch. It's supposed to be more durable, but I love the capability that it can track your heart rate. It can track track your blood oxygen. It's like a little pulse ox on my wrist. You know what I mean?
You use it for everything. Like you will map or like track your walks with Sox, which Sox is our dog.
Yeah.
And like the
setup. You almost
setup,
have to get Sox his own Strava account.
Yeah. We should probably.
The setup you have downstairs. She has a biking video game.
Nice.
Do you connect your actual road bike to it?
Well, I used to put my bike first I had a wheel on trainer, which was clunky, and there wasn't any video games back then. So if you were riding the trainer with the wheel on, you had to like get your bike on the trainer and it would spin against a magnet or a fluid, like the resistance. So that wasn't super fun. But now, I mean, with those direct drive trainers that will Bluetooth with Zwift so that all your data ends up in the game, it's a whole different experience riding indoors.
Coming from a medical background, do you think you had a slight leg up on, like, nutrition-wise?
I think I understood the physiology involved pretty well and what I was trying to accomplish and why you needed to spend a certain amount of time with your heart rate in a particular zone. So all of that, I think, was interesting
to me.
Which
TriDot talks a lot about. Zone 3, zone 4.
Yeah, zone training's huge, dude.
So
yeah.
there's a lot of resources available now that weren't then. I had a book and that was, I think I had a bike computer, maybe. But I didn't have a smartwatch or anything like that then.
Right.
So you had the power sensor on the pedals?
Now I do. Now, like, I have one of my bikes has a pedal-based power meter. The other two have crank-based power meter. Yeah.
So getting into triathlons, and this is...
We signed up for a triathlon.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's Raccoon ex-military. Lake. He stays active, goes on runs and everything. Yeah. I was a stoner that just did nothing.
Yeah, he's trash.
And so I was like, hey, well, you know, we started this podcast. Let's sign up for a triathlon.
His idea.
Very cool. That's great.
And so we trained for a year and a half, and then they canceled the triathlon
14
a week,
months.
The week of. Aww. Have you ever had anything like that happen?
Where they cyanobacteria is what they call it. Yeah. Cyanobacteria.
A lot of times they end up canceling the swim for water quality.
Well, why do they?
Have you done a relay triathlon?
I have never been part of a relay team, I don't think. But I've done the Terre Haute Triathlon it's not Raccoon Lake, it's...
Who put that one on? Because we did
We signed up to do CalTri Indy at Raccoon Lake.
Yeah, so CalTri was the company that did it. Do you remember the company that did yours in Terre Haute?
It's a different company now, but in the early years of the Terre Haute Triathlon, there was a company that had put it on. It's one of the longest running, like, small independent races in the state. And there was also something called the Muncie Endurathon. Now, I did the Muncie Endurathon when it was still like a independently owned race. Mm-hmm. And that, the Muncie Endurathon many years ago in like the 80s and early 90s was a qualifier for the Ironman World Championship.
Because you have to qualify to go to Ironman in general, right?
Mm-mm. No, just for the Ironman World Championship.
And do you know how much... to go to Kona, you have to qualify.
I looked it up. Do you know what the purse is on that?
A lot.
Do you know what it is?
People make full...
For Kona?
No, for the Ironman... You win a race, then you go to the next race. You win a race, or you finish top 15, you go to the next race, and they pay for your next ticket. The purse on the final Ironman season is like $750,000. I know if you're in the top 15 in the final race, you split $750,000 with 15 other people. I had no idea that it was
top,
that much money.
The top placing, if you win the Ironman World Championship, that's a pretty good payday, but it goes down pretty steeply from there. So the people who are like off the podium, like fifth, sixth, that's barely covering their travel expenses.
Yeah, but you're still getting like $3,000 or whatever to do something
you love.
Yeah, but
it probably cost you $10,000
in prep and leadership.
But if you're like me, though, it's like it's really just doing it because like I wanted to do a triathlon because all my friends tell me all the time, you're not an athlete. You're not an athlete. And like, I tell them all the time, I am an athlete. I have an innate athlete body. I don't know why. I believe I am. So then I was like, I'm going to prove him wrong. So I signed up with this triathlon idea and I was going to do it. But like that competitive drive, if you have that competitive drive to prove people wrong, like I feel like if you place.
Or were you just 20th, competing with yourself?
You know, I feel like you're pumped about that. I think that early on, like when I first got into triathlon and I first decided I want to do an Ironman, it was about trying to prove something to myself, prove something to other people that I can complete this and I can. And the longer I have been in the sport and the more time I have spent doing some, you know, big endurance events, mm-hmm. The less it is about proving anything to anyone, but about having the experience. Being like every one of those race days is a really interesting experience where you learn things about yourself. And you get to share this communal experience of that race.
So do you have
the weather, the conditions, the terrain?
I mean, if you were just trying to prove something to other people, you could have done one. Yeah. But you've got at least like 5 or 6 medals right there.
So Chattanooga was number 7.
Which is a beautiful place.
Yeah, we had a great time in Chattanooga.
Hilly though,
bike course is so much fun. Yeah, it's a little hilly, but it's great bike course. It's a downriver swim, so I'm not a very good swimmer, and for me to clock a 50-minute Ironman swim, which works out to like 120 per 100 for that swim.
I don't know what that means.
Ordinarily, I am a 2 minutes to 2 minutes, 10 to 15 seconds per 100 kind of swimmer. If you just put me in a lake in open water, I'm going to be somewhere around 2 to 2:10. Like on my best day, I'm a little over 2 minutes per 100 swimming. So to go 120 per 100, just flying down that river because of the current.
Did I hear you right? So are you slower in open water? So what's your?
It was downriver.
Yeah, if it's still open water.
Yeah, if it's still open water.
I am not a fast swimmer at all.
Are you a part of that local group that's like? So when we
the
were
Masters
training for the triathlon,
group?
Yeah, it's where they have swimmers. Certain lakes around
here. I am a member of the Southern Indiana Triathlon Team. Right. So we have group open water swims at Blue Lake in Newburgh on Thursdays and at New Beginnings Lake over on the west side on Mondays. That go on throughout the triathlon
season. Is that when you do most of your swimming? Do you do any in pool, like indoor?
Yeah, I swim in the pool regularly, but during the summer when we're having open water swims, I like to go to those because I get to see people. It's kind of social. It's more fun to swim in open water with friends.
Three disciplines do you think is your favorite?
I like the bike. In fact, increasingly over time, like my knee doesn't, like my days of improving my run are probably behind me. So I tend to, that knee's gonna.
No, never. You can always be better.
Well, you know, I set a PR in the half marathon about 2 years ago that was 17 minutes faster for a half marathon than the first one I did was my previous PR, which had been 17 years earlier.
Wow.
Damn, I'll
like
take
a,
it.
That's like a minute.
I'll take it
that's
to
a
be
minute
like,
20 a mile.
Yeah, faster. I will take it at 50. I was, what, 52 at the time to be making progress and things.
Yeah.
But now I tend to skew more toward bike events and do more bike stuff than triathlon stuff these
ADHD
days.
ADHD thought off the knee thing. I saw this article where they did a, like, they were testing placebos on people.
Yeah.
And so they had, like, say, 20 people come in and they had knee problems. So they, for 10 of the people, they put them under. They made an incision on their knee, closed the knee back up, didn't do anything. For the other 10 people, they did the actual procedure. The people that didn't have the procedure, their knees got drastically better than the other people's. Just throwing that out there.
Oh, it's the
always possible.
Like a placebo.
But have you, so your favorite is biking. I really enjoy the biking. It's like a, like people get runner's high. I hate running, but there's something about biking that's just like,
oh, no, you there's don't like, nothing better than a good day on the bike.
You don't like swimming either.
I like swimming because it's,
you do.
You, well, the first little bit sucks, but once you get your breathing down
your flow,
and everything, it's almost meditative.
Yeah, it really is. Don't you think?
We
like,
didn't freestyle. We decided we were going to breaststroke it.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Oh, that is.
You're those dudes.
Do you know
oh,
what
man.
My, no, before you start hazing me, do you know what my, do you know what my 1600 meter time was breaststroking? 49 minutes in the pool.
That's great.
49 minutes.
Unfortunately, for the rest of the, like at some of these bigger races, you're talking about swimming with 2,000 plus other people.
You really can't do breaststroke because you're kicking.
So if you are swimming freestyle and going along and trying to navigate traffic through with 2,000 other swimmers, and you come up to the dude breaststroking, you get kicked. That's what happened.
That's his fault. He came up on me, bro. Run up, get done up. That's how I look at it.
Okay.
Run up, get done up.
I cannot understand that because I have always been so slow at breaststroke.
You know what it was? My trainer. So I'm not, when we signed up for the triathlon, like you, my least favorite event, immediately it was like, I haven't swam since I was in high school. I'm 30 years old. What the hell am I doing? And then I was like, all right, so I'm going to get in the pool. I got in the pool. I did 200 meters and I was like gassed. I was like, this is awful. Tried all the different strokes. I was like, this is awful. I got a trainer. My trainer made my B stroke so beautiful and so efficient in 1 month's worth of training that, like, I mean, I was like rolling my wrist like efficient. And I'm telling you, dude, she got me so clean that, like, I was on my hardest training day in the pool. I was doing 2,500 meters, and I was in the pool
all in breaststroke.
Yeah, all in breaststroke. Wow, and I'm in there. I put my earplugs in.
Whatever works for you.
I put my earplugs in, and like you said, it is like a meditative thing. I lose track of where I'm at. I see the clock when I start, and then I just get in the pool, and then I look up. I check my watch. Yep, 2,500 meters. I'm done, and I'm out.
So as time's gone on, has there been any supplements that you just can't go without?
I have found, you know, like in terms of fueling a very long day, like for fast people, like the fastest Ironman athletes, you know, the professionals are finishing that race somewhere between, you know, 8-ish to 9 hours. My fastest Ironman time, that's a 15-hour day. So you have to take in calories throughout.
How many calories
all of that
do you think
time?
You're burning in that time? 3,000.
Oh, it's
plus.
Yeah, it's 3,000 to 4,000. It depends on the conditions, but it's a lot. So you have to continually take in calories. And what I've found is liquid stuff. There's a product called Infinite Nutrition that I use to fuel.
The gel. Is that like
all
a mainly like a glycogen supplement of sorts?
It's carbohydrates, and mine has, you know, it's electrolytes, carbohydrates. There's a little bit of protein, some amino acids in the formulation that I use.
So you're saying 15 hours. What is
Ironman?
Oh, for an Ironman. I was gonna say, okay, but what is the standard triathlon? The standard triathlon is 1 mile in the water,
an
30
Olympic
miles
distance.
On the bike, 6 miles on the run, right?
Yep, that's
Isn't that the standard?
That's an Olympic distance triathlon.
That's the Olympics. Yeah. So like What is your time frame on one of those?
My gosh, I did an Olympic at some point last year.
Yeah.
Probably at Columbus, Indiana, which I think that was an Olympic try. I don't know. Two to 3 hours, probably.
See, I was a cutoff too. I was gonna say, like, when I was training the whole time, I was like sub three, and I'll be fine.
Yeah. So this, like, says the average finish time for men is 2:53, and for women it's 3:07.
Yeah.
So I mean, it kind of depends on the course, but I'm not fast. What I'm not one of the fast kids in any of these disciplines. Well, yeah,
neither am
have
I.
You,
what is, real quick before you take,
and now off. I am not fast and old. So.
What are the distances for? So you were saying a 15-hour day. What distances are you referring to for that? That's a 2.5 mile swim.
That's 2.4 miles.
2.4 swim.
A typical Ironman distance. Bike ride is 112 miles. The last one I did was Chattanooga, and Chattanooga, for whatever reason, is actually 114 or 116 mile bike ride.
Damn.
Just to get you back to town from where the best loop is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a 26.2 mile run. So.
And you're doing that in 15 hours.
What's post recovery? Are you doing the air boots, or
we have a set of those which I use occasionally. We have some of those Theragun massagers,
you ever try stretching, like cryotherapy,
an ice bath,
you've done a great cold plunge?
or a cold, like a cold river. One of the, like, last year I wanted to hike Half Dome at Yosemite, so my daughter and I took this trip out to California, visited my sister, saw some things, because I had gotten a permit to climb Half Dome. And the best thing after that hike, because it ended up being like an 18-mile hike with tremendous amounts of
elevation bird change.
And, you know, that last section on the cables was super hard.
Oh, yeah.
The best feeling in the world was putting my legs in the Merced River, which was extremely cold. When I was done hiking. And same with, I did another event that I did last year was the called SBT Gravel, which is a 100-mile bike ride at altitude in Steamboat Springs. Fantastically beautiful. One of the best days I've ever had on the bike. But all I could think of when I got off that bike was going and sitting in the Yampa River.
Where
near
is
the finish line?
Steamboat Ridge, Colorado.
Steamboat Springs is in
Steamboat Springs.
Sort of northwestern Colorado.
Okay, northwestern. Okay,
really
nice.
Beautiful place.
Yeah, very high altitude.
You ever tried a sensory deprivation tank?
Ooh, yeah, no, you ever mess
the,
with
like
that?
The ISO soak thing.
ISO floats. Yeah, ISO we float. Love those.
Yeah,
guys, dude.
I have never done it. I've heard it's an interesting experience.
Even for basically it's a giant Epsom salt bath.
Yeah,
and like the way your body feels afterwards is so good, yet alone the mental stuff that goes on while you're in the tank or whatever.
I love Epsom salt baths in general. Like soaking in Epsom salts is like after every big bike ride or anything. Yoga is a great way to like sort of recover from
big
efforts.
You ever cry during yoga?
Yeah.
Cry? Sure.
Yeah, so apparently there's certain poses you
like
hit that has like
yin
stored
yoga
up.
And it can be. And then
you ever cried while swimming?
Of course.
Fill up your goggles.
Fill up your goggles.
That is a weird feeling though. When training for this triathlon, I had never, like I said, I'd never swam since high school to this point until I was 30, and then working so diligently and religiously in the pool and finally getting to the point to where like I would knock out 1,000 meters and I'd be proud of myself and I would get out and I would be like sweaty. And that's weird because I had never swam any sort of way that I would ever get sweaty in a pool. But I was out of the pool and I was like,
you'll get sweaty. I used to get you super itchy because I get itchy when I sweat.
Yeah.
But I would be in the pool. So I'm like,
this doesn't
swimming,
make sense.
And I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, like, this does not compute.
God bless
one of
you.
The
thank
toughest you. Swims ever. I did Ironman Texas one year.
Whereabouts is that in Texas?
That is in the Woodlands in Texas, which is slightly north of Houston.
Okay.
So it's like the Carmel sort of nice suburbs of Houston. It's a lovely neighborhood. It's a beautiful area. But the swim was in a lake, and the water temperature was like 90 degrees, which is incredibly warm.
Very warm. My God.
So you felt like you were sweating under your swim cap. And by the time you got out, you were just so, so hot.
That's why I shaved my head. I don't. Yeah. It's not because I'm balding.
Well, you have to for those races, you have to wear the swim cap because it has your number written.
Oh, dadgummit. Yeah. Yeah, dude. The triathlon is a wild sport. In Texas, I would love to do one.
What do you think your goals are with triathlons over the next few years?
Ooh.
Well, in this next year, I am signed up to do Ironman Lake Placid, which is an iconic race in Lake Placid, New York.
Because of the giant alligators, right?
No. Because it's an Olympic town.
It's New York. They got giant rats and Mexicans right
now. No, you guys know about the giant alligators, right? They made a movie.
That is a very that's a great movie.
They made a movie about them.
Oliver Platt, and I think Betty White is in that movie.
God bless.
Really funny.
God bless Betty White.
Rest in peace. The queen. B-dub.
It's a funny movie, but different Lake Placid altogether.
Oh, damn. Not the same
place. The one where they had the Olympics. Remember the Miracle on Ice and all of that? Yeah. I remember going skiing at Whiteface, the ski area that's there at Lake Placid, when I was a teenager. And so that's always, ever since I kind of got interested in triathlon, I've always wanted to do that race. But it's a very, obviously a very hilly bike. And until the past couple of years, that was not something that I could think of signing up for.
Do you sit down or stand up when you climb hills?
On a tri bike, you're usually sitting down. I mean, you might stand a little bit at the peak of the hill, but it's much more efficient to spin and stay seated and stay aero.
You're using more of your body and like wind drag.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to be down, I would assume.
You do not want to be burning matches early in the day and you know, putting that much effort, because you only have so many throughout a long day like that. You only have so many like anaerobic or big efforts, and standing up to climb on the bike, you're going to pay for it later.
Your biggest anaerobic effort, I would imagine, would be like if you're somewhere in a competitive space, like if you're timing yourself and you're like, oh shit, I'm in the last mile of my run. That's going to be your biggest anaerobic burst, I'm assuming, is if you're like, all right, 1 mile to go,
no.
And you just step it out.
Well, I mean, it is when you get, by the time you are at the end of a very long day like that, and you are getting close to the finish line, you find it in yourself to pick up the pace, just because you want to be done and stop moving.
So a lot of people talk about, like Rogan calls it his inner bitch voice. When you're like, it's telling you to quit, or I don't know if I can make it. Do you have that anymore? And like, what do you do to combat that?
My best days in any kind of endurance event are the ones where I can stay present and grateful. Like when I'm thinking about, that I'm grateful to be there, that I'm grateful for the things that my body still lets me do. And to be out there experiencing this with all these people and having those interactions with the community. Like in the course of a Ironman race day, you're going to interact with other competitors, with volunteers. Volunteers for these events are just flipping amazing.
Yeah, they're dope, dude.
That
some
is
of the
like,
most positive people you'll ever meet.
Yes. You know? So it, like being fully present in the moment and not wrapped up in thinking about myself and my expectations and what I want. If I can stay focused on having those experiences and having those human interactions with the people you cross paths with throughout the day, that's a great day.
You and I are wildly different. I focus in almost exclusively internally, like where I'm just like, oh, don't be a bitch. Don't be a bitch.
No.
Don't quit. No. You're going to hate yourself for the next 5 years.
The downside to some of these triathlons is there's some rules or whatever. Because it'd be really
drafting
cool.
Drafting and stuff.
Well, yeah, but I think it'd be cool to like wear a GoPro, but then wear one of those wireless mics and then like you could almost like talk to yourself and watch the video afterwards, but
you can't in the water.
A lot of people in gravel cycling will there's a ton of content of people who take a GoPro and will film and publish their rides, which are you know, and they're in out in really beautiful places, so that's great, and it's a good way to get a preview of a course you might be considering a race you're signing up for. But for most triathlons, you can't wear headphones. There's no, like, there may be music playing at an aid station or over loudspeakers, but you cannot just have your earbuds in and be in your own little world. And because it's from a safety perspective, you need to be able to know what's going on around you. You miss out on some of the really cool parts of the experience if you're in your own head and just thinking about your own stuff.
I noticed I did a 5K is the only competitive thing I've ever done with other human beings. For the most part, I distrust and dislike most human beings. That being said, I did sign up to do a colon screening 5K in Evansville not too long ago.
That's fun. It was
really short, really easy. And I was like, I remember I finished and I was at like eight and change mile pace because I was just taking it slow and I didn't know how to run it. I'd never done anything like that. And then I finished, and in the last sprint across Main Street, I like just sprinted it out and got done. And I was like, holy shit, like that was really easy. I was like, it's something about having people around you and like the competitive nature. Your vibe
it's easier
changes.
To go fast
Changes. Your blood pumps a little harder. Sure. Your brain works a little differently when people are around you, as opposed to just training on your own. And
especially like finishing.
Yeah,
there's a crowd of people
through
the finish line.
Yeah,
there's probably someone announcing like all the finishers.
Yeah.
So. Does Strava motivate you? Are you Strava motivated?
I have a complicated relationship with Strava.
Yeah.
There have been times where, because when you're on Strava, like as you are doing the thing, I am worried about what other people are going to think about the thing on Strava.
Like
that's
with
not
Zwift
good for
or
me.
Outdoors or just in general?
No, like because all of my stuff is uploaded like to Strava. So if
like
I am out on the bike having a good time, it is not good for me to be thinking about what everybody else on Strava is going to think of this ride in terms of speed
or
my power
or a mile.
any of that. But that is not good for me.
Do you find that there's certain segments that you know, like I did, like, so like when I was training for the triathlon,
there
like
are
Newburgh
Strava segments.
Riverfront was like, I got like a PR there. So it was always my goal and I knew the segment. So as soon as I hit this area, I would try harder for that mile just to try to.
Sometimes if you have that feature activated on your head unit on your bike, it will actually tell you when you get to a Strava segment. And I ride with some people who have that feature and they want to hit it hard on all the Strava segments. And, you know, that's one way to.
Have you ever like owned a segment to where it's
I have a handful of QOMs, very few. I know where I rank on the leaderboard on the common Strava segments that I ride, and it makes sense to me because I know the other girls who are up the leaderboard for me, and they're either younger or stronger cyclists, or you know, and I'm okay with that.
Is Strava only for cycling? Or is it
for
everything?
It's for running and hiking.
It's like
and,
social media for people that
social media in
bike.
General is not a really good thing.
It's
for,
a bad
you
thing
know your relationship with it. I have to like step away from Strava. A little
have you
got
tried getting sponsored by any nutrition companies?
Oh no! I am not a accomplished enough athlete for anybody to want me to represent.
I bet we
their
could
product.
Change that, Drew. You get your mom a camera and a microphone, and we can
get
her sponsored.
I'll start you a triathlon YouTube channel,
dude. We'll shoot a demo. It'll be
There are so many. Really, I do. I have people that I follow on who publish, you know, triathlon content or videos or whatever. And there are some people I love that people share their beautifully shot and put together videos of the stuff that they're doing. I find that really inspiring. So I love to be on the bike trainer, working hard, watching, you know, Heather Jackson and Paula Finley kill it up Mount Lemmon. I mean, that is so inspiring to me.
Are you listening to any audiobooks while you're on these long?
Yeah.
What are some of your favorites?
Oh, gosh. I listen to so right now I'm in at the very like the last 8 hours or so of this enormous novel called The Covenant of Water by Abraham Verghese, which is a very sprawling long saga set in like colonial India.
Nonfiction or fiction?
Fiction.
Okay. Like
the
it.
The best. I read The Shining by Stephen King, mm-hmm. when I was a teenager, like 14, it gave me bad dreams, and I had not read another full-length Stephen King novel in 30 or more years. And we got a camper van, so we do these long road trips, and I have really rediscovered Stephen King and listened to Fairy Tale was the first one, and then Holly. And a couple other Stephen King novels this year.
So the majority of it's fiction?
A lot of fiction, but let me see. Nonfiction-wise, I listen to like autobiographies of, there's a lady named Rebecca Rush who has done amazing work in like, she was a professional mountain biker and things like that. I listened to her book. Gosh.
I got to mention, while we're here on nonfiction, I just finished Tom O'Neill's Chaos.
Whoa. I just finished Black Elk Speaks.
Whoa. Tom O'Neill, Chaos. If you're into the late 60s, early 70s, CIA.
Charles Manson.
Manson murders, MK Ultra.
I can't do true crime.
Oh my God. It was so deep.
That sounds like something I would like, but I have not read a full book in...
Audio, bro. I can give you my Audible login.
This one's tough.
He has access to Audible.
This woman reads more than anyone I've ever met.
Do you find yourself reading?
Oh, you know what guys would probably like is I've been listening to A People's History of the United States. Howard Zinn. That's really, really cool. Let me see.
Do you find yourself reading more tangibly or listening more to audiobooks now?
Right now, because I spend an hour each way commuting in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So because I spend that time in the car, I have pivoted to so much audio, and I listen to audiobooks on the bike.
It is
Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain.
Which I need to listen to.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, dude. What
do you ever listen to?
She was
any
like
of these?
Appeasing me because I think I brought it up and she
listened
to
it.
And I haven't listened
to it.
You haven't even started.
Do you listen to some of these and then have to go buy the physical copy after?
No, because I'm trying really hard not to acquire more books.
You read a lot on your iPad, though.
Yeah, I read for years because for the longest time I would buy books and it's just. I don't want to accumulate stuff.
Like,
so I read on my iPad or now anymore, I listen to almost exclusively everything.
I can't read the digital screen. I can't do the readers, the Amazon readers and the iPads.
I can do it, but like she would be sitting on the couch reading and I'm like sitting next to her and I'm like, let's see what she's reading. So I start reading and she turns the page like 30 seconds in. She's read both pages already. And I'm like,
One of the neatest things that we used to do together, like when the kids were little, I would read to them. Like we would have snuggle time at bedtime and we read like all of the on a like, you know, middle school kids level. We read all of the Shakespeare stories.
Oh, yeah.
And I had one that was like Greek mythology. We read a version of Moby Dick. And... I think The Call of the Wild.
Yeah, I don't know. The one that stands out to me the most is Moby Dick.
Yeah. It's still pretty long, even the kids version.
Dude.
So I love literature and I always like to read to them.
You don't worry nowadays about everything becoming digital, like books and everything, and then say the internet gets wiped out and now you have no access to all that knowledge.
I think there will always be hard copies of books available.
Except for Mein Kampf.
I'm oh my god, hold on a second. Hold on. This brings up a good question. Can we bring this up? Is this a safe topic or no?
Sure.
Is this a safe? Okay. Yeah. We got to find out. Okay. Thomas is trying. He's a very open-minded individual. Like I was.
I just like I like knowledge. Yeah, I like. I've read Genghis Khan and the Making of the Modern World. I've read.
Her face does not approve of Mein Kampf. Immediately, she was like,
"It's not that I don't approve of it. It's just read excerpt? I've read like small snippets of it, it's terrible.
See, I have no interest in reading Mein Kampf, but if I could get like an original Hitler painting.
Yeah, I'm in on that. I'm in on that all day.
I'd hang it in my house.
I'm in on that all day.
I don't know if I'd hang it.
I would buy two.
I maybe wouldn't hang it. I'd keep it in my garage.
You could probably burn it and make enough money off of the video of burning
off the
it
YouTube
to buy a
views
new one.
To compensate See, for the, like, the purchase.
I just want to throw this out there. Fuck Hitler.
Yeah, 100%.
But
100%. But also,
if I could find a painting he did.
He did good work.
He couldn't get into art school, so I don't know.
About good work, but it's not bad. I have an interesting, like, in just seeing how people think. Like, I would love a book on Stalin as well, just to see how he thought. But then, like, if you go farther back, like, I would love a book on Alexander the Great, Cleopatra. But history is so tainted through that time.
You might find interesting, there's this guy, Ryan Holiday.
I've listened to a lot of his books.
Yeah, so he's written books that sort of distills the writings of the Stoics for modern life. I've listened to almost all of his stuff. I think there's something to be said for having an open mind and taking in diverse kinds of information.
Yeah, you can't be
as long as you're not, you know,
like obsessing over it or something along those lines.
As long as you stay discriminating,
right?
You know,
stay
the source,
stay subjective, stay outside. Or not subjective, objective,
but
stay
like,
objective.
Going through these things like autobiographies or whatever, you learn like people that you like. Like, I'm a huge Apple fan. Apple slut for life over here. Watched 100%. Every keynote since the very first iPhone that's ever come out every year. I get the new iPhone every single year because I'm crazy.
So do you think that who was the more interesting character?
Wozniak.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Steve was crazy. So Steve, if he would get stressed out, he would go sit on a toilet with his feet in the bowl.
Yeah, he would. He was
the dude's multi-rich, and you can take a bucket and fill it with water and put it underneath your office desk, and same. But no, I'm gonna go sit on the back of a toilet and put my feet in the bowl.
Well, you know, geniuses tend to be kind of eccentric.
Yeah, look at Elon Musk, dude. He's batshit bananas, dude.
Yeah, I used to.
Did you see the name of his last child? XYZ Alpha Omega Charlie times 5 divided by.
I don't know if I'd qualify him as a genius, though.
Oh, dude.
Smart? Oh,
he's definitely...
Smart? Yeah.
Very.
But the only reason he's
it's because he picks the right
successful
people to
as
with,
he
yeah,
is because
team.
He had a rich daddy. Like, he
well,
got
his dad
a
was
shit
wild.
Ton of money.
He got a kickstart.
Elon's family's wild, too. So
and he didn't design Tesla.
His grandpa was flying a plane and from South Africa to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that flight... You can't just fly to Australia. You have to fly up through India.
Mm-hmm.
And their plane went down and like crashed in like the desert. And his grandpa like repaired this shit out there.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It's fire. They're not dumb is what I'm saying.
No, he's definitely a very intelligent man.
He
like,
simplifies
books,
everything.
Book smart, sure. Not, I don't think he has a ounce of street smarts in his body.
Yeah, because that's the A word.
He's
Asperger's. Yeah, that's the A word.
So, he's got a
well,
little bit of
tism. I was going to say, with anesthesiology and this medical field and seeing all the things in that aspect, did you ever struggle with like mortality?
Ooh.
Well, I've had the privilege of being with people. You know, I've been a nurse for 30 years. I've seen a lot of people die. And it's both, you know, heartbreaking and a privilege to be with people in the final moments of their life. But it can be kind of traumatizing. Now, I loved being a flight nurse. That was the job that I had dreamed of for a long time. But you are a participant in the worst days of people's lives. It is, you know, you are involved in somebody's tragedy. It's not yours, and you're trying to help.
You're trying to make it.
But but you know, sometimes there are injuries that are not survivable, and you know, a career in any kind of healthcare, you have to you have to take care of yourself.
Was it hard to separate yourself and like see that and then come home and have three kids and you got to worry about?
Oh man. Yeah, it's very hard.
I struggle with mortality.
I'm sure
all
that
the time.
That there were times where I would come home and they would think, why is mom losing her mind about, you know, I was going to put my seatbelt on.
Not even just
or
three
helmets,
kids, five kids.
Or yeah, there are actually five of them. My stepdaughters who have lived with us since they were 6 and 8. We all of them grew up in the same household. So we had five kids. And they, I'm sure, could feel the impact of the fact that their father and I, when they were like young, he worked in the emergency department and I worked for LifeLight. And
I mean, there was that where like, we're not moving until you put your seatbelt on and like you have to wear a helmet. There was also like, if you're sick, tough.
Yeah, you'll 100%. Be all
right. Like you get a little hurt,
speaking
rub
of
some dirt on it.
Speaking of mortality, what do you think happens when curtain call? You know what I mean?
What do I think happens?
Yeah.
When people
what do you think
die?
Happens? And this could, and if you're
or like, because I mean, like you
person,
saw people pass. So like, was there any common thing said or?
And if you're a religious person, you don't have to dive into what your religion is. Cause two things we don't really cover on the show is religion and politics, but like, you know,
so
subjectively, but
I don't have any like woo woo stories. I think there are times that people do know when they are going to die. But I don't have any mystical experiences from my career. Many of the patients that I was with as they died, you know, either had injuries inconsistent with life, mm-hmm. or it was not unexpected. Commonly in the ICU, somebody has, you know, has been very ill and you withdraw care and they end up dying.
But what do you think happens to your consciousness, your soul?
You ever seen lights flicker as somebody passes or anything?
Nope.
But what do you... Stop interjecting.
I was just saying, my grandpa died and the lights flickered. I was there.
No one, dude, okay, I was about to say no one cares. I care, but I'm asking a question. Like, when you pass, have you ever thought about, because I think about this often, like, when it happens, I'm wondering, your brain's going to be functional for a little bit. Do you look at it more clinically, more scientifically, or do you look at it more as, like, astrologically, like, I'm going somewhere else, like, in a...
I don't know.
Astrological sense?
I believe I am not a religious person any longer. I was certainly raised that way. And there was a time in my life where I thought, you know, that was...
Pearly gates, old Petey.
You know, important.
Yeah.
But I live life on a spiritual basis. And I tend to think that I am, at this point in my life, very spiritual, but not religious at all. So I think that... you know, it's not important to me, like, the features of what heaven looks like or mm-hmm. I imagine more of a good place kind of.
But you imagine a terminus.
Yeah.
You're not imagining.
Like, I imagine you'd be reunited with the people you cared about in life. And I would hope that you would be free from suffering. But I don't know that the whole, you know, angels and white clouds and, you know, man in robes with a beard thing is...
That'd be tight, though.
No, that's
That'd be
not,
tight, though.
But wrong.
I
would
know.
Check it out.
I know that I don't know.
I like that. I like that. I feel like that's a pretty solid answer.
And I think, like, certainty about these things is, you know, problematic. Anybody who tells you that they know for a certainty that what's going to happen is...
Yeah, you're talking to a liar.
Yeah.
Plain and put.
Or they're delusional.
Plain and put.
I mean,
they're
you know.
Delusional. I mean, yeah, fortunately, yeah, they are. Do you ever think on this journey that you've been through that we call life, whether it be in the medical field or whether it be in your triathlon training, was there ever a time that you wanted to, you know, just tap out, call it call quits, you know, say uncle? Was there ever a time like where you were like, yeah, I'm fucking done. You know what I mean? I'm quitting. This is it.
Sure.
And then if so, what was your motivation that pulled you out of that rut of a moment where you were like, F this, I'm out, peace. You know what I mean? What was your motivation that kept your foot on the gas?
I don't know that, I mean, I have struggled or, you know, experienced pretty significant depression through most of my life. So sure, there have been times where I've been very despondent, but a couple of things come into play there. I was married when I was 26, mm-hmm. and my first husband took his own life. So I had been married for less than a year, and we were separated at the time, and not to like tell the whole story and everything, but I was widowed by suicide at 26.
That's brutal.
And that is not a nice thing to do to your family, to, you know,
to a young 20-year-old person.
Yeah. That's hard. I mean, that was a tough time. So it's a very selfish act. And the times where, you know, I have been really depressed, to the point of being despondent, I wouldn't do that to the people who care about me. You know, I have all of my brothers and my sister are still living. My dad is still living. You know, that's awesome. I wouldn't want to do that to them. And ultimately, I chose to live, even though, you know, it might not have been a great time in my life. You just keep sort of trudging forward. The other thing I guess I would want to say about that whole topic of, I have taken on some of these kind of big challenges, like that that day, you know, taking on a very long endurance event. You learn things about yourself in the course of the ups and downs of that day. There are times where you think you aren't going to be able to do it.
100%.
There are times where you think, I just might die.
100%.
It feels bad.
Yes.
But it's temporary. You know, all you have to do is keep trudging, keep moving ahead, keep moving forward. And eventually, you know, you walk if you can't run, keep putting calories and fluids in, and you'll find, you know, half an hour later, your whole perspective has shifted. And you just stay in that moment and keep, you know, keep grinding for
one
for
foot in front of the other
world. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you, the way that you learn to deal with, by choosing to do big, hard things and learning about how to get through those times where it doesn't feel great and you think it's not going well, then when you're living your life and life hands you something not that you didn't choose, like, this isn't an endurance event that I signed up and paid money to do.
Yeah.
This is my life, and I am dealing with some stuff, whether it's in your family, in your professional life, in whatever aspect of your life. And life hands you something really, really hard.
Bad hand.
But the same thing holds true. If you keep going, keep showing up, stay true to your principles. Do the things that you know are going to work.
Put calories in.
Yeah, exactly.
Put fluids in.
Or,
one foot,
you know,
in front of the other.
Same thing with your life. I keep showing up and doing the things that I need to do to get by and take care of myself. Eventually, it's going to be better. Whereas taking your own life or ending your life is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
100%.
So, you know, I know that if I just keep breathing in and out, putting one foot in front of the other, showing up for the people who care about me and doing the things I have to do, next week, next month, I might feel very differently about my circumstance.
Have you ever heard you've heard about how to eat an elephant, right?
Yeah, one bite at a time.
One bite at a time. That's very applicable. But it's also funny that you related it to being a triathlete. You know, really just putting one foot in front of the other, keep putting calories in, keep drinking water. Because, like, really, life is an endurance sport. It really is, no matter how you look at it. And, like, you're going to have to climb a hill in this race of life. And, like, sure, it's going to suck. And, yeah, your calves are locking up. but it's time to drink some water and put some calories in and put that next foot out in front of the other and keep on going.
So I tend to think that choosing the hard things that I choose to do, whether it's like the taking on a big hike, like the Half Dome hike, or Andrew's brother, Matt, and I hiked rim to rim at the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. which was so cool.
And a lot of people get hurt there. Day.
But it had its, that was a long day. It had its ups and downs. But the when I have chosen to do sort of big, sort of scary things that might have been beyond my capabilities, I learned stuff about myself. And so then when life kind of comes along and hands me something that I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can do this, you just kind of go back to those same principles.
Those same moments.
That have you thought about writing down those thoughts or things that you've overcome and leaving like a book behind for your children, like Drew or like,
you know what? Lessons? My dad has. My dad is, he's going to be 94.
Stud. Sounds like a stud. In a couple of weeks.
But when he retired, he chose to write a book about his time in the Navy during the Korean War. He chose to write a book about his professional accomplishments in the very early days of the satellite communications industry. And, so, you know, just some of the experiences he had in life. And that was really cool. I have not been so moved that I felt like I needed to, write all this wisdom down. I share it with
maybe make it an audiobook.
Yeah, because you know Drew's not taking the time to sit down and read for three,
but he can record
hours.
It.
Yeah, no.
My kids are not big
readers. I'll make
readers.
You a documentary.
There you go. I'm going to raise my own documentary filmmaker and he can, play with the documentary form by
like that young Spielberg
making a film about his mom.
Any last minute shout outs? Who's got you to where you're at? Who's keeping you going?
Or dates coming up, like dates of like anything you want to, 100 people are going to see this. If you want anybody to like,
If there's an Evansville race that we can come and hold up a sign,
fun runs, anything, whatever.
Shout out to the Southern Indiana Triathlon team. Anybody who is interested in triathlon, wants to be involved in triathlon. The Southern Indiana Triathlon Team is a great organization that I've been a part of since it was started in the early 2000s, and lots of wonderful people who will show you the ropes, teach you everything you need to know about triathlon. The same with if anybody's interested in swimming, there's a master swim group at the Deaconess Aquatic Center that is a great bunch of people doing that stuff.
Beautiful pool, by the way.
Yeah,
newly
it is
built.
A
very
beautiful, world-class facility.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Beautiful.
There's a handful of people in the community who worked very hard and kept up the pressure to get that built, and it is fantastic.
Stunning.
The local cycling community, we are very fortunate here in Evansville. We have the Evansville Bicycle Club, and there's those are some people who really have helped me build my skills on the bike and just find a lot of joy in riding bikes. Great friends there. And I have friends that I can go out and do stuff like this morning we went out and ran at Audubon Park. On the trails in 6-degree weather.
Nice, dude.
So my friend Ann is my kind of partner in crime. She and I did Ironman Chattanooga together, and we go run trail, and I'm really grateful for the people in my life who, show up to do these things with me. I have a great work family in all of the different places. Dave and I have spent our careers between, here at several different hospitals in Evansville. We worked in Jasper for many years when the kids were growing up, and now we work up at Davies Community Hospital in Washington. And I'm really fortunate I get to work with great folks.
Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to the Amish.
Yes, we.
They're not going to see this, but they're crushing it.
You might be surprised. There's You know, they
Rumspringer, you know.
Yeah, sometimes they have more more involvement in technology.
We
got to
get an Amish kid on Rumspringer.
They don't like photos and
you can
videos,
get a Mennonite,
though.
But
they don't like having their photo taken or their video taken. They're weird about
you got
it.
Any motherly advice? Let's wrap up on one piece of motherly advice and then we'll all sign off.
And it has to be to Drew. Stop putting holes in your body.
No, I'm joking.
No, but in general, not to Drew, but just what's your best piece of motherly advice to a wayward son, and his name might be Drew
or Thomas.
Brian. He's not wayward. I love that my kids are free to express themselves, and you know, like the tattoos and the hair and the piercings. It's just, you know, it's just hair. It's just a
beautiful thing.
I really would prefer that you leave your sweet little faces like uninked, please.
No ink on the face, bro.
I don't think I could do a face tattoo.
Bro, I could see you getting a face tattoo.
Like try and like body art is one thing, being employable is another.
The only time I would ever get a face tattoo if it was like right here. Yeah. But
covered
even
up
then,
by the sideburn.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think I could do neck either. Maybe.
Okay.
So, I don't know. We've had some great conversations about, you know, I'm very into right now, like reading stuff and content about like sort of personal growth and developing a growth mindset and like process goals. I tend to view like where I look at where I want to get to and small things done consistently
over time,
like over time, rather than like looking
compound
way out in the future and saying, oh, I want this great big thing. Think of the habits that you can develop day to day to take you in the direction that you want to go.
Are you sharing this content that you're taking in with Drew? Because
yeah,
I feel
I
like
do.
He's,
I sometimes
feel like
sometimes
he's not growing at all. Honestly,
I get recipes, orca videos, and the occasional like motivational, like personal growth.
Yeah, like there's this an author, Brad Stolberg, is one of the nonfiction. Brad Stolberg and Steve Magnus, and there's this guy Dan Harris who has both an app and a podcast called 10% Happier. And some of the guests
the
and
really
interviews
good.
That he does Damn. On there. I'm just like interested in sharing things with my kids that are going to help them be
mature,
happier and healthier
yeah.
in their lives.
Growth, man.
You know,
positive.
I believe in them. I know that they're going to be just fine. They're good people. And I'm just so excited
I don't know about
to
Drew,
see where
Drew's next Quentin Tarantino.
Creativity takes him. You know?
Yeah, I'm the next Quentin Tarantino with less feet.
And he's going to do 11 films, not 10, so suck it, Quentin. no, but that being said, I do have one final question before we put a bow on
okay.
today. And I'm sure by now, I don't have headphones on, but the music is probably cued, and we're spinning up to put a bow on it. But
okay.
before we do that, you want to do a quick
Dude,
sniff?
No.
You don't even want to try it?
No.
You can. I'll let you hold it, and you can go as close as you want.
I am familiar.
You don't want to try it?
Nah.
You don't.
Nah.
You guys
did you ever hit the salts in the ambulance?
Can you not smell that?
I can smell
yeah,
it from
that,
here,
I can already
but
smell it.
I'm not interested. That's just silly.
I don't know how I feel about this being an every podcast thing.
I really like it. I really like editing the clips. What did I say? Hoorah last time?
I'm have
having
to
a bronchospasm over here.
Brian.
Yeah, it's nasty, right?
It stays with me for a while.
I didn't get too close, but.
No, I haven't had a drink in 6 years. I am not into any mind or mood altering, to mention like
I won't
nasal
sleep.
Passages no. altering properties like that stuff might have.
I won't sleep for a week now.
Yeah.
No, thank
that
you.
That being said, though, yeah.
Thank you to Beth Mom. Head, my amazing, intelligent, lovely mother.
Thank you for bringing us Drew into this world.
Oh,
yeah,
Drew's
a
good boy.
Drew's a damn.
We're so proud of him.
Brian's still computing.
And he was, believe it or not, he was the cutest, sweetest. Like, have you guys seen any pictures?
Oh, we're gonna look at baby pictures tonight.
Like a baby.
We're gonna see him tonight.
Oh, he was so precious. He's still precious. He's just a little grubbier and kind of
grubbier.
You know. I'll take it.
No, but seriously, thank you so much. You invited us into your home. That's why the surrounding is as weird as it is right now. Not weird, but it's just not the studio. So that's why you're seeing us where we are. So thank you so much, Beth. You let us invade your personal and private space. For that, we are eternally grateful.
Well, it was an interesting conversation. Thank you for having me.
Hopefully it turns out. Again, this is the first time we've done the mobile pod. So we're going to fingers cross it and just hope we don't die. But it has been another thrilling episode of The Days Groom. My name is Brian Michael Day.
My name is Thomas Grimm.
And I'm Drew Head.
And this has been Beth Head. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thanks.
Hey guys, if you liked what you heard today, there will be a new episode next Tuesday, as well as every Tuesday at 6 a.m. So hit that subscribe button and let your phone do all the work for you.